Sometime in May, members of this congregation will get to vote to call a new settled minister. By now, if you are not aware of this fact, you are either new to the congregation or have been mightily distracted by something else of great import in your life. In our tradition, when you call a minister, you grant to them a free and untrammeled pulpit. The actual language in your proposed letter of agreement continues, "The minister is expected to express his or her values, views, and commitments without fear or favor in this free pulpit." It is a powerful concept. You expect your minister to be guided by his or her conscience, not dictated by doctrine or dogma, political correctness, or pleasing the most powerful or influential members of the congregation. And note that the word is expect, not allow or invite. Rather, ministers are expected to speak according to the dictates of conscience, to offer their life, their experience, and knowledge passed through the fire of thought. That is a foundational part of the job of the minister. The counterbalancing freedom of the congregation is called freedom of the pew. Freedom of the chairs isn't quite as poetic, I don't think. And it means, freedom of the pew means you are under no compulsion to accept or even agree with what your minister says from this pulpit. Indeed, you are expected to exercise your own conscience in your own spiritual life. That is a foundational part of the job of membership. And while that may seem so automatic to you all, there are plenty of traditions. Many of you have come out of traditions who say that is not the case. You do not have that freedom. But we believe it's a foundational value for us that all of us can only be guided by conscience. And these freedoms to do so are basic to who we are and why we gather in congregations as seekers. It is a part of what we mean by our free church tradition. It seems so clear and obvious, foundational, basic, automatic to who we are, and yet it is not always quite so easy to practice. In 1907, John Haynes Holmes was called as a relatively young man to one of the largest Unitarian churches in New York City, the Church of the Messiah, which is now called All Souls Unitarian Church. Holmes was an avowed pacifist, an early admirer of Gandhi, which wasn't a particular problem until World War I broke out. On the eve of America's entry into the war, Holmes preached using the teachings of Jesus to support his pacifist stance. Entering the war was widely popular in the country. Speaking against it was tantamount to treason for many. At the very least, dangerously unpatriotic. Yet Holmes spoke his truth, his conscience, forthrightly. So long as I am your minister, this pulpit will answer no military summons. Other parish houses may be turned into drill halls and rifle ranges. Ours will not. Other clergymen may pray to God for victory for our arms. I will not. So long as I am priest, this altar shall be consecrated to human brotherhood. Words strong and stirring. Yet Holmes well knew that his was a minority and radical opinion. He knew when he preached those words that the Board of Trustees would likely call an emergency meeting the very next day, and they might very well vote to dismiss him, to take away his pulpit. Yet the board of the Church of the Messiah was nearly as courageous as Holmes himself. Even though all but one man on the board was firmly against Holmes's position, they knew what it meant to be a free church who had offered a free pulpit to their minister. If he could freely speak his conscience, they could all just as freely disagree. The free pulpit and the free pew demanded as much from them both. Such freedom can be costly. The church promptly lost nearly a quarter of its members. Yet in the months and years that followed, it regained and surpassed those original numbers. And perhaps this is because something powerful is created when people are free to express their most deeply held convictions. There have been other fractious times in our history as Unitarian Universalists. The most fractious times were during the prelude to the Civil War and in the Vietnam era. There were ministers who lost their pulpits for espousing abolition. Even the revered father of Unitarianism, William Ellery Channing. It is not our proudest chapter in our history. Yet many of the Boston Brahmin, wealthy, powerful, and influential Unitarians, profited, at least indirectly, by trading goods created by slave labor. The cause of abolition threatened their livelihood, and they didn't want to hear about it in church. Especially during the early years of the protests about the Vietnam War, many of our congregations were split over support or opposition to that conflict. And some of it was neither pleasant nor pretty. With our benefit of hindsight, it might seem obvious now who was on the right side of history. Yet from the middle, it is rarely so clear. This is why you grant your minister freedom in this pulpit. Freedom indeed to offend you in the midst of trying times. This is also why the principles of the free pulpit and the free pew are so important in war and in peace. Yet not only are these principles challenging to practice, they are often misunderstood. People often think that freedom of the pulpit extends to anyone who speaks from this beautiful edifice. And that's not quite right. The pulpit belongs to the congregation, and you entrust it freely to the care and conscience of your minister. There is nothing about freedom of the pulpit that means that the minister has a lock on the truth, has all the answers, is always right. In days of yore, the pulpit was almost always filled by ordained clergy. If not the congregation's minister, then someone who he, and yes, it was almost universally he, exchanged pulpits with. Nowadays, we talk more about shared ministry, and most all of us, ministers and lay folk alike, prefer a collaborative process. I want there to be many diverse voices heard from this pulpit. This is why I love having celebrants to share leading the service with me. This is why we often invite people to share their stories, as Dave did, to give us their lives pass through the fire of thought. Yet I take my responsibility for caring for this pulpit very seriously. It is to me sacred duty, honor, privilege. Freedom of the pew is also oft misunderstood. Someone recently shared with me that she thought it meant if you don't like the minister's preaching, you are free to leave. Otherwise, you grin and bear it. Well, you most certainly have the freedom to leave, yet you also have your own freedom of conscience and the freedom to tell your minister that you disagree. As my colleague, the Reverend Heather Lynn Hansen, puts it, freedom of the pew means that you expect to listen with an open mind and heart, weigh what the minister has to say, and test it in your thoughts and in your living, and make up your own mind. There is nothing that comes from this pulpit that obliges anyone individually to any action or point of view. You are, of course, free to get up and leave if you are too upset. I would hope that you can find ways for it to be comfortable, well, not terribly uncomfortable anyway, to wrestle with what upsets you, to learn something from it, and to bring it to my attention. Just last Sunday, someone in this very congregation exercised her freedom of the pulpit beautifully. I preached on white privilege and spoke some about the events in Ferguson and New York. Sarah Bratley came up to me afterward to tell me something that I had said, or really rather not said, that had truly disturbed her. Now, I don't necessarily recommend that you rush up immediately after the service and share all of your critiques. The minister's Sunday at 12:30 is effectively your Friday at 6:30 after a very long week. It often feels also like we've just kind of laid our hearts out on the table before you all. This is not the time to give some point-by-point critique of their job performance. Yet Sarah was gentle, direct, and respectful. And she had a very good point. I had not been entirely careful about how I characterized events like Michael Brown's death in Ferguson. It wasn't directly what the sermon was about, and it also, what I said, did not reflect my own nuanced belief about the racialized context in which too many black men are shot by police. It didn't reflect what I also know and feel about the job of being a police officer, in this highly racialized and heavily armed society. A job which is so very difficult. There is so much more to this whole issue than the big bad police and the sadly oppressed victims. Cops do their job in the face of very real fears. One of the issues in all of this that I don't hear as much as we might speak of it is about how heavily armed our populace is. Yet the police are very aware of this all the time. I know this only too well, as my own cousin was a police officer killed in the line of duty during what appeared initially to be a routine traffic stop. Things can turn violent at any moment, and cops need to be prepared for it at any time. We live in a complex, highly racialized culture. What Sarah did was make me think more clearly and carefully. Though I didn't mean to, I fell into a certain cultural trope of the left that oversimplifies the situation and tends to blame one part of a complicated issue. It's not all that often that people come talk to me about my sermons, especially if there is something they don't like. And again, I'm not asking you all to rush up on Sunday afternoon to parse theology, yet I would very much like to hear from you. I'm not sure that folks realize how much my own thinking is influenced by conversations I have with you. There is nothing more that I love than wrestling with theological concepts, and you all are my teachers too. Ultimately, this all comes down to relationship. A colleague of mine recently pointed out that the word free and friend come from the same root. A root that means both to love and to set free. Now, I always thought that the saying, if you love someone, set them free, if they come back, they're yours, if they don't, they never were, was awfully dippy. But it turns out to have some truth, at least on an etymological level. The same root of free and friend means love and to set free. Freedom of the pulpit and freedom of the pew are not two freedoms up against one another. Rather, they imply a depth of relationship and a depth of responsibility. Whatever freedom we have exists out of our interconnections. Freedom grows out of relationship. And the relationship between a minister and a congregation is unlike anything else in the world, and it has so much power, potential, possibility. Freedom of the pulpit is balanced by freedom of the pew. We are not doing our work unless we are in dialogue. We live in a culture that is so polarized. It is so easy to fall into this cultural trope as well. If you disagree with something I say or believe, one of us must be wrong. As if my belief will fall, is less worthy if I cannot convince you of the righteousness of it so thoroughly that you change your mind and agree with me. Too many conversations, even among friends or fellow church members who generally agree about so much, turn adversarial. We try to convince one another rather than listen. Theodore Parker was one of those 19th century Unitarian ministers who got in trouble for espousing abolition. And he understood well the power of the free pulpit. He said, "Truth speaks in a thousand tongues. With a pen, graves her sentence on the rock forever. You may prevent the freedom of speech in this pulpit if you will. You may hire your servants to preach as you bid, to spare your vices, flatter your follies, to prophesy smooth things, and say it is peace when there is no peace. Yet in doing so, you weaken and enthrall yourselves. But on the other hand, you may encourage your brother to tell the truth. You will then have his best words, his brightest thoughts, his most hearty prayers. May you call your next minister to this free pulpit, seeking his or her best words, brightest thoughts, and hearty prayers. In so calling your minister, may you be fully aware the freedoms we are all granted in this free church tradition. May our lives, minds, and hearts be nurtured, expanded, comforted, challenged, and set free from this place, in this sanctuary, from this pulpit. Amen and blessed be."